I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Good afternoon and welcome to Heritage Radio Network. This is the inaugural broadcast of Cutting the Curd, your biweekly dairy dispatch. And thanks to Hearst Ranch as a sponsor of this, of our first show. We're broadcasting today from Roberta's Pizza, which is a beautiful little patch of garden out in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, boasting some of the finest pizza in the borough. Our show today is about National Dairy Month. It may be a little known fact in New York City, but June is National Dairy Month. It would seem that the stars have aligned for our inaugural dairy broadcast here on Heritage Radio. We're going to spend the next half hour dissecting Dairy Month, and it's going to be myself and my lovely co-host, Miss Natalie Jordy, who is an author and popsicle saleswoman extraordinaire.
Hello, everybody.
So we're going to go over a bit of history and lore behind this nationwide festival and then call in the dairy experts. And by experts, I mean people from Wisconsin. Nobody does dairy quite like that great Midwestern state, and we have two wonderful guests who are both steeped in cheesy traditions to illuminate the wonders of Dairy Month for everybody out there in the in radio land. First, we're going to be calling on Jeannie Carpenter, who is a self-described cheese geek and author. And then we'll be talking with Bill Schlinsog, a seasoned dairy veteran who has seen more action in pretty much every aspect of the dairy business in Wisconsin than anybody I know. So without further ado, let's get down to a little bit of history. Dairy Month history. National Dairy Month started in 1937 as National Milk Month, and it was actually a way for farmers to deal with surplus milk. Why was there a surplus? Well, in the summer, the cows go out on pasture, and cows on pasture produce way more milk than cows that are confined in the barn and who aren't getting much exercise and who aren't getting access to all that good green food. And back in the 30s, commercial and home refrigeration was sort of spotty at best, and so the farmers needed an outlet for milk, which is, of course, a really perishable product. Little side note on the history of refrigeration, which I found while spelunking around the internet like a dork. In 1921, there were only 5,000 refrigerators produced in the United States. By 1931, there were over 1 million refrigerators made, and production really didn't take off until after World War II. And by 1950, over 80% of farms and over 90% of homes had refrigerators. So somewhere in between that time, they started Dairy Month to try to get people to drink more milk and eat more ice cream in the summertime. In 1939, the name was changed from National Dairy Month, or National Milk Month, sorry, to National Dairy Month, and came to encompass other products such as butter, ice cream, and cheese, which, of course, I have a particular affinity for. And though the campaign was national, nobody celebrated harder than Wisconsin, who at that time was the largest dairy state. Sadly, that title was usurped in 1993 by California. But Wisconsin is still the biggest cheese-producing state. So that is still one of their claims to fame. So how did they celebrate Dairy Month? That's what we're kind of here to find out about. And we're going to be talking to our first guest, Jeannie Carpenter, in just a moment or two. And we're going to be talking to her about Dairy Days in Wisconsin, which are... festivals held in the summer, in the summertime, in June, that focus on farm breakfasts, but they also have all kinds of livestock competitions and, you know, cart pulling and just good old fashioned Midwestern fun. Have you ever been to anything like that, Natalie?
No, not in America, but I do know that in some of the European countries they have similar festivals, especially at the time where the cows are coming back down from the mountain and so on.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to see how Wisconsin does it. And we'll be back in just a moment. Hello. So we're back on Cutting the Curd here with Jeannie Carpenter, who is being patched in from Wisconsin to talk to us specially this afternoon. Jeannie writes a dairy blog, which is actually, it's the Cheese Underground, blogspot.com. And it's a really, really funny blog. Anyone who has, you know, the opportunity to check it out definitely should. Her most recent entry that I had come across was all about cheese curds. And if I can find it here.
Wisconsin's national dish.
Wisconsin's national dish, absolutely. And basically, Jeannie's recommendation for everybody was, if you can't get fresh cheese curds where you live, your best bet would just be to move to Wisconsin because there's no other substitute. Jeannie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great.
All right.
We are in business. So I was wondering if you could first tell us a little bit about what you do and how you got involved with cheese.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm from Wisconsin originally. Actually grew up on a farm, but we didn't milk cows. Really didn't get involved with cheese in the dairy industry until about 6 years ago. Was asked to do some communications work for a nonprofit organization that was trying to kind of reinvigorate artisan, farmstead, value-added dairy in Wisconsin. And that's the first time I ever heard the term artisan cheese, and I've sort of been hooked ever since.
Aha. So what was the first artisan cheese that you ever tasted? Was it like love at first bite?
It was. You know, the first meeting that the organization is called the Dairy Business Innovation Center, and this is when we were just starting up. And they asked me if I would be interested in having a job writing about artisan cheese. And my first question was, what is artisan cheese? but in my defense, in Wisconsin 6 years ago, we didn't have a whole lot of cheese that fit that category. The first stuff that I had that really knocked my socks off was a sheep's milk cheese made by Bob Wills at Cedar Grove Cheese. He's making it, and he still makes it for the Wisconsin Sheep Dairy Cooperative called Dante.
Okay.
And that was the first time I really ever had cheese that it was complex. It was like eating a completely different food.
For me, it was the sheep cheese. The sheep did it to me too. It was the same. I was in Italy when I was in college visiting a friend, and she took me to the central market there, and we had some pecorino, and I was just head over heels. I came back to the city completely obsessed with finding it again. Cool. So now, so you were working with the Dairy Business Innovation Center. Now you have your wonderful and funny blog. How did you decide to start that?
I started that about 3.5 years ago. And I started that originally just to give the artisan cheesemakers in Wisconsin a voice. It was to the point where I had been working with the Dairy Business Innovation Center for a couple years by then, and I was trying to pitch stories to food editors and to buyers around the country, you know, telling them that we're making this great artisan cheese in Wisconsin, and literally I could not get anyone to return my call because then, sometimes now, but really then, when people thought Wisconsin, they thought of those foam orange cheese heads that we wear.
Of course,
no
yeah.
One, yeah.
My grandma's a Packer fan. I own one.
Oh, yes. I mean, like, everybody has one here. But no one really believed me when I said, you know, we're making farmstead, handmade artisan cheese. And so I started that blog to just start really highlighting those folks in Wisconsin. I would go around and interview them, take pictures, describe the process, and it really sort of morphed into kind of like this scoop on what's happening in the artisan and farmstead cheese industry. And I've had so much fun.
That's great. I noticed that your last entry focused on cheese curds, which are, of course, a Wisconsin staple. We don't see too many cheese curds out here in New York. I have some at my shop, and they're actually from upstate because I try to focus on local farms. But that's the first question I get when everybody tries them. They're like, are these from Wisconsin? And I kind of like, I'm ashamed that I have to tell them no. And then they ask me, are they fresh? Like from today, do they squeak? And I'm like, oh, they don't really squeak either. And so I loved it on your blog when you said, if people can't get fresh cheese curds, they should probably just pack up and move to Wisconsin because that's the only way to get them.
Yeah. So, you know, our state milk marketing board does a great job promoting cheeses. And so they put out this press release, you know, basically telling the nation why they should buy Wisconsin cheese curds. Well, I'm sorry, but I've been on both coasts and I've bought the bag of Wisconsin cheese curds. And by the time that they get there, they're nothing but, you know, little chunks of cheddar cheese. They no longer fit that curd definition because to be a cheese curd, it really has to be a day or less old. It's got to be squeaky. It's going to get stuck in your teeth. It's going to be really salty, and it's going to be awesome. And people just don't get that if they can't get fresh curds in Wisconsin. They think cheese curds are these little chunks of, you know, cheese that they buy in a bag. And I'm telling you, it's just not the same.
Well, I completely agree. Whenever I go home to visit my family, I try to endeavor to get across the border for a minute to, I grew up outside of Chicago, but literally about 20 minutes from Wisconsin. So I always try to go and get my fair share of cheese, or cheese curds when I'm back visiting the family.
Yeah.
But so we were, on the show today specifically to talk about National Dairy Month, which is, of course, probably bigger in Wisconsin than anywhere else in the country. And I was hoping that we could, that you could tell me a little bit about what goes on as National Dairy Month in Wisconsin.
Sure.
Jenny, where in Wisconsin are you?
I am in Oregon, which is just south of Madison.
Okay.
And so I'm in the epicenter of dairy world here in Wisconsin. Most of the dairying goes on in the southern half of the state. And so June Dairy Month in Wisconsin pretty much turns into, it's kind of like the Texas of cheese. You know, everything's bigger, better. We eat more, we consume more, we talk more about dairy. You know, God love us, it's all about cheese. to give you an idea, we have 72 counties in Wisconsin, and in the month of June, we will have 75 county dairy breakfasts. Some counties love them so much they have more than one. So, some of these names, I was looking at I try to go to a couple every year, and some of these I haven't been to, but we have one going on June 13th in Waukesha called Dairylicious Days.
Very
and then
nice.
And then the one in June 20th in Columbia County is called the Moo Day Brunch.
The Moo Day Brunch.
Yeah.
So what happens at these?
Yeah, what are the breakfasts like?
So what happens is, anywhere between 1,000 and 10,000 people descend on a dairy farm. They're always held at a working dairy farm so that you can tour the barns, you can look at the cows, you can pet the animals. And then everybody lines up under this huge, 2-acre tent, and you eat a breakfast that consists entirely of dairy.
Cheese curds again.
Sounds like heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's usually, pretty inexpensive. It's anywhere between $3, $5 a person. It's to really get people, excited about eating dairy and getting on the farms. Because, so many of us are at least one, sometimes two or three generations removed. So it's good to remind kids where their food comes from.
Absolutely, absolutely. Have you seen in your area that that sort of dairyscape has changed a lot since when you were a kid? Or what are the changes you've seen?
It has. When I was a kid, I lived on a road with four different farms, and three of the farms milked cows. My dad actually milked cows until 1966, and he sold the herd. Since then, I go back home, and none of those farms are operating anymore. What's happening in Wisconsin, we're still making the same amount of milk. Actually, we're making more milk, but we are transitioning into a little bit bigger farms. And they're still family-owned. What's going on is, a mom and a dad bring a daughter and a son-in-law or, a niece and a nephew into the operation. And instead of milking 50 cows and making a living, which they could have done 20 years ago, now they're milking 150 cows.
Okay.
So maybe they have to buy the neighbor's farm down the road. And so what happens when we're used to have four farms, maybe you have one or two now. They're still family owned. They're milking more cows and making more milk.
Okay. Okay.
Same thing that's happening everywhere, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that was lovely. I'm glad she got to join us for a few minutes. And we'll anyone who wants to follow up with Jeannie and her work should definitely visit cheeseunderground.blogspot.com, because she is a very entertaining and very knowledgeable and obviously passionate writer. So thank you so much to Jeannie for joining us. And we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. To Cutting the Curd with my good friend Natalie Jordy. My name is Ann Saxelby, and we are here talking. Our next guest is Bill Stligson, who is a veteran of many different aspects of the dairy business in Wisconsin. I actually met Bill last July at the American Cheese Society conference in Chicago, where I was asked to be a judge, and Bill was my co-judge, and we just had a great time, and he has an invaluable store of knowledge about dairy in the state of Wisconsin. So thank you so much for being on the radio with us today, Bill.
Okay.
So you've been involved with many different aspects of cheese and dairy. I think I remember you telling me that you grew up on a cheese. Well, you didn't have animals, but your family made cheese. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Yeah, we had a small crossroads cheese factory.
What kind of cheeses would you make there?
Well, at that time, we just made cheddar cheese.
Okay.
And that's there weren't a lot of specialty-type cheeses in being made at that time.
Where did the milk come from then?
The milk came from all small little farms
and
in the area.
Would you make cheese 7 days a week? Or?
No, 7 days a week. There was no refrigeration or things like that. You didn't do that. You picked up the morning's and the night's milk in the morning, and then you made cheese out of it every day.
Every
7 days a week.
Rain or shine. Sleet or snow.
My dad grew up on a farm just like that. They just picked up milk from all kinds of like local dairy farmers with, 5 to 50 cows, and everybody just dropped off their milk at 5 o'clock in the morning. And my grandpa spent all morning making cheese, and then everybody was paid according to how much milk they had donated. So if on a given day their milk made up, 13% of the volume of cheese that had been made, then they would make 13% of the proceeds off that cheese.
That was a little bit different.
So how would the milk get from these small farms to your family's cheese factory? Was it, did you guys go out and pick it up, or did everyone drop it off like Natalie was talking about?
Some of them that were close by would bring their milk for themselves, and then we would, we had a truck that we would go out and get the rest of it from the farmers.
Now, did you grow up in a big family? Was it just you, or did you have brothers and sisters helping out?
No, I had an older brother, and I also had a younger brother, but he was a lot younger, so he was just a baby then.
Okay.
But it was during World War II, and my older brother had graduated from high school, and it was drafted into the Army. So I was the next in line and helping my dad make cheese.
Okay. Wow. Wow. So you said there was no electricity in your cheese factory at that time.
No, not in the first factory we were in. We did not have electricity, and being as how it was during World War II, you couldn't get electricity in at that time. Everything was for the war.
Wow.
So we went quite a while just with running a steam engine to power a drive shaft, and that drive shaft run belts off and ran all the equipment and things.
Wow, that's incredible. That's for somebody, nowadays, it just seems like the technical, the technical know-how, even for how to make the cheese, how to know when the milk is, hot enough, how to know when to run it, how to do all different parts of the process, would just be, so much harder with that.
Yeah, it was very rudimentary type making cheese. You felt of things with your hands, and you tested things by feeling of them, and your starters were not the kinds that they use nowadays, where you just take some starter and you add it into the milk and that sort of thing. We had to carry over our starter every day from taking some of the starter out from the day before and carrying it over to the next day to set.
Were you running a pasteurizer off that steam engine, or was it unpasteurized?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Interesting.
No electricity,
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So can I ask a little bit about your family's background? Where was your family from originally, and how did they wind up in Wisconsin?
My family originally came from Germany. My great-grandfather came, and then my father, and they were farmers. And then my father, being one of quite a number of children, decided that he liked making cheese, so he worked for a neighboring cheese factory, and that's how he got into making cheese. And then as it went along, he wanted to have his own place, so he did buy a small cheese factory that had been closed. But the farmers in the area wanted a cheese factory that they could have close by, and so they opened the factory up again, and he purchased it.
And where was the factory located?
It was in Clark County, which is right in the center of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it's basically a dairying area. There isn't much manufacturing at all there.
Okay, okay. And the site where the cheese factory was, is there still dairying going on there, or has the landscape really changed a lot?
No, there's still dairy going on there. But the factory itself is gone because it was a small little factory at that time, there were close to 3,000 little cheese factories in Wisconsin.
Wow, wow.
And then when trucking came along, where they could haul the milk further, well, then they did more of that type of thing, and a lot of these little factories closed because they were getting larger, and the problem came in with the sewerage and things like that, that the DNR... you had to have some kind of a way to expel all of that product away and drainage from the factory and that sort of thing. So it became pretty costly for a small little factory to put in anything to.
Bill, what did that cheese taste like?
What is what?
What did that cheese taste like?
well, it's good cheese. Sure. We particularly in the when it was a little cooler, we had real good cheese. It did cause a problem, like in the real hot months, because people didn't have electrical cooling. They cooled with just well water, and sometimes that wasn't very cold either. They'd put it in a stock tank where they had their cows drinking out of also, and so it got kind of warm, and the milk got very ripe, and you needed hardly any starter at all because the milk was already working when you got it.
Absolutely.
And you'd have some gas formation and these types of things.
Well, that's really interesting because in the first part of the show, we were talking with Jeannie Carpenter about National Dairy Month. And in the course of my sort of research about it, it said that June was decided to be National Dairy Month because of just what you're talking about, They wanted to encourage people to drink more milk in the hot summer months because, you know, farmers needed a, they needed to move it, plain and simple.
Well, yeah, June is a good month for making cheese in this climate that we are here, because that's when your cows are out on the fresh grass, you know, and they really get some good feed, and you get some really nice milk and some really nice flavored cheeses from that grass-fed cows that are giving the flush milk. At that time, cows were in supplying milk in the spring, and they just about all came in at that time when they'd have calves. So you had a flush of milk at that time. That isn't the case anymore. Farmers milk year-round kind of the same amount of milk. They stagger how the cows become fresh.
Okay. And so after, you know, after working in your family's cheese plant, I remember us talking about you spending a great many years working as a cheese and butter grader, was it, for the state?
I worked for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, yeah. I worked first as an inspector for sanitation, and I'd call on these cheese factories and see that they were keeping their things clean and that the equipment was all right, and I'd call on some dairy farms and see that they had their milking equipment clean and that sort of thing. And then I went into, in Wisconsin, there's a grading standard for cheese, and people are licensed to apply a grade. And so the Department of Agriculture has to oversee that these people are actually doing the correct job of grading the cheese. And that was my job, to go out to warehouses and factories and see that where they were applying the grade, that it actually was the grade that they said it was.
Bill, what was the criteria for the grading?
There's a standard of how much can be wrong with a product before it's unsaleable, you know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you would have to look at the body and the texture, just like when we were judging. Remember, we tasted things, and we felt of it, and we pushed it, and we squeezed it, and ate some of it and tasted the thing. That's the same thing I did with the product when I would go out and look at it in the field.
So you've probably eaten more cheese than, you know, most of the people who are alive on this earth today.
I felt a lot of it anyway.
Oh, well, I think we're actually just about out of time, but I wanted to thank you so much for being on the phone, and technical difficulties and all, we made it work eventually. So thank you so much. It was so nice to talk with you again.
Well, it was nice to hear your voice again, too. You're a good help, a good person to work with, so appreciate that.
I hope we get to judge again together someday. That was
great
fun. All right. Thanks, Bill.
Are you going to the American Cheese Society this year again, Ann?
This year I can't go. It's going to be in Austin, Texas, and I've already kind of used up my allotment of travel. And you know, with new projects like this radio show, I'm going to be in New York a little bit more. But next, we're going to do the show every other week to start off with. And, next, episode is actually going to be called, it's going to be on Father's Day, June 21st, and it's going to be called Who's Your Daddy? And we're going to talk with different breeders and genetic specialists to talk about how genetics and breeding influences dairy animals. So I would like to thank our sponsor again, Hearst Ranch, for their generous support of the Heritage Radio Network. And all right. And we'll see you guys again in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening to Cutting the Curd with Ann Saxby and Natalie Jordy.
Are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi.
I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.